Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Good afternoon, folks. Welcome to the UR Tennis Network, to the Bruce Lipka Show. This is Bruce Lipka coming to you on Thursday, April the 4th, noon Eastern Daylight Time, where spring has yet to arrive. We are all anxiously awaiting it to show up so we can get outdoors and start playing some tennis. But thanks for everyone tuning in today, and we're going to have a great show today. Today's show is going to have a little different format. I've received a lot of emails over the past 8 months or so that the show's been going on, and sometimes we don't get to them, and sometimes people want us to expand a little more on a topic that we touched, and I thought this might be a good opportunity to bring back a couple previous guests we've had who've got some opinion on what's going on out there in the tennis world. So kind of three topics that we'll be looking at today a little bit. The foreign player issue in college tennis is a hot button once again. And the word out there is that the USTA may be stepping in to try to do something and limit the number of foreign players at the Division I level. That's certainly an interesting discussion that we'll have. Another discussion that we'll have today, we'll talk about, has the United States permanently lost their position as a world tennis power? You know, as the U.S. going to make a comeback in terms of the quality and number of tennis players we're fielding? You know, another hot topic out there today is Dr. Ray Brown's complaint that he's brought against the USTA. He's been informed that there will not be a formal hearing on a motion for dismissal, but there will be an informal discussion between he and the powers that be. So we'll have Dr. Brown later on and tell us a little about that. So we're going to hit on a lot of topics today, a lot of kind of what we'll call our greatest hits of what we've done in the past. Hopefully, if you have any questions, you'll call in or email us in. Call in is 714-583-6853. You can always email us at thebrucelipkashow@gmail.com or brucelipka@gmail.com. Stay with us here as we break for a quick commercial. We'll be right back.
Alternative Lighting and Power is a renewable energy solutions-focused company with an emphasis in helping athletic facilities. We would like to upgrade your tennis complex to the 21st century. We offer a range of services that will upgrade your tennis complex. We can use our technology to make your facility virtually disappear from the energy grid. We can provide lights, scoreboards, scoring systems, cooling systems, heating systems, camera systems, covered seating areas, wastewater management, and even new buildings. Our company is located in Houston, Texas, but we provide services to all 50 states and internationally. We would love to visit with you about our opportunities. Please contact Ed Love at 832-549-4193 or email at elove@alternativel-p.com. You can also visit our website at www.alternativel-p.com. We are the sunny side of business.
Folks, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us today. First thing we're going to start off with today is we're going to go into the emails, where we've probably received about 50 emails. And one of the big topics that has been coming up is where is the U.S. in terms of their place internationally in tennis? Joining us now for part of this discussion here, we've got Chuck Creasy's back with us today. Chuck, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, Bruce. How are you, man?
Thanks for coming in today. You know, one of the emails I was telling the folks today, that we're kind of doing a greatest hits show today, and I've taken a lot of the emails that we've gotten that point in certain directions and talk about certain subjects, and I thought we might address those because obviously there's interest there. And one of the questions that's been asked out there by me, by others, is, you know, has the U.S. lost its place as a dominant world power in tennis? And a couple of the responses, and it's been more than one of the emails that I've received, says, you know, they blame the academy system on the fall of U.S. tennis and possibly tennis becoming more of a business in the U.S. than perhaps it used to be. But, you know, when you're on the show, we talked a little about Mr. Hopman and how, you know, you were with Mr. Hopman. I think Mr. Hopman was the original academy guy. So, you know, a couple questions for you I'd have was, one, you know, do you feel that the academy is the fall for the downfall possibly of American tennis? Or two, what did Mr. Hopman's training sessions look like with large groups of kids?
Sure, Bruce. You know, thanks for asking, and I'm very, very glad to, you know, contribute any way I can. I appreciate the way you're so straightforward with everything. You know, the large answer is I don't think in the United States of America we're excellent with anything anymore. You probably saw that thing on YouTube where they say, what are we great at? And, you know, then they, you know, and if they say nothing, we're not number one in anything. We really aren't. We're not one number one in education. We're not number one in industry anymore. We're probably number one in maybe military power and maybe our arrogance at times to think that we are without a good work ethic.
Well, so that's, we're good at litigation, too.
So that's a long answer. But the academies is what you wanted to talk about. The academies, yeah, you know, we all saw, you saw this happen, I saw this happen back in late 70s, early 80s. The academy started, and I always, and from the start, what happened was they pretty much, you know, picked the ripest fruit from all over the United States. They used to have pockets of great players coming out, whether Bill Price in St. Louis, for example, the McKinleys and everything. You know, there's great stories about the McKinleys. He taught them ping pong for one whole year, all the kids, before they actually got to play tennis. And then, you know, I grew up in Indianapolis. There was a guy named Chuck DeVoe everybody aspired to be. And in Florida, you grew up in Florida, you had Holiday Park there and, you know, Moore Park and things where kids aspired to be the best there. Well, the academies basically picked the ripest fruit in all of the role models from those areas around the United States. And it's sort of, you know, when you take the biggest fish out of the pond, anybody knows this, that what happens, everything gets stunted, sort of, you know, and I think the growth got stunted there. That's the first answer. I think that's part of the, also the academies themselves, Bruce, they have a way of breeding mediocrity if the kids do not have skin in the game from being living there or something. If you have a kid that comes in from some other country or something and comes to the academy, the motivation is good, but it's never going to be excellent unless they're a very unique human being, because it's not the kid's neighborhood. In other words, the kids will fight hard. If I'm from Indianapolis, I'm going to fight hard for my home turf, and it's not the same if you are in a different place. So the kids will come in, and you always can see the academy kids. When I used to recruit at Clemson, you could always tell the academy kids, they knew how to push their workouts between 55 and 63 miles an hour, and they never pushed the edge of the envelope. And you probably would agree with that. So that's number two. Number three, party on the academies, is the kids become a commodity often where, the you know, maybe the kid needs to be disciplined, but they don't because it's a $45,000 a year implement. That's a lot of court time if you got to sell $45,000 worth of court time in 1 year. And
let's stay with that one for a second. Let's stay on that one for a minute. So I think we could make the argument, and anyone who knows anything about our sport would agree, that the most important quality you can have as a tennis player is self-discipline. Nothing's more important than that. And when we you've got to do what needs to be done when it needs to be done, not what you want to do. You know, so it takes that discipline. If we're a business instead of, you know, and some people have either said, I've heard, you know, many people say tennis isn't a sport, it's a pseudo sport because there's no real coaching, you know, that occurs in another sport such as you played basketball, I played basketball. Let me tell you something. The coach said box out, and if you didn't box out, you found yourself sitting on the bench next to the coach. He says, you know what, why don't you sit here until halftime, and maybe you can go back in if you decide you want to start boxing out. And
yep.
By God, you got back in the game, and you boxed out. No matter what happened, you boxed out. Now, we don't have that sort of leverage with the tennis player, particularly, you know, we used to have it. I remember being down at Moore Park with Bobby Curtis down in Moore Park in Miami, or seeing Mr. Everett down there at Holiday Park in Fort Lauderdale, and I saw these guys pull a kid off the court if they weren't behaving well, not letting the kid onto the court until they would go and hit the number of balls on the wall they were supposed to hit before, you know, their practice or their lesson or their session started. I can't even imagine in today's world, you know, somebody doing that if their business is reliant upon the dollars.
Well, you still have to. I mean, you have to. You knew this as a college coach. You had to bench your number one guy as an All-American. You got to do it. You got to do what you got to do. You do what's right.
College coach,
you do
yeah.
The right, you know, and well, it's the same, yeah, right. But you still got to do it even the other place. It's easier to nonprofit like we're at, you know, because you can sort of bench kids if you have to. But you still got to do it. That's coaching 101. It's the Johnny Wooden stuff. You know, Johnny Wooden, I mean, he talks about what he did with Bill Walton and what Bill Walton didn't want to get a haircut. And Johnny Wooden said, you know, Bill, I respect you, and you obviously have strong convictions, and I respect that you want to do this thing, but, you know, we'll miss you. You know, and you have to do that. You know, in the end, it's the kids should never have the leverage over the adult. The player should never have the leverage over the coach. And you know, that's just coaching 101. But you're right, it's hard when the best player is going to walk out the door, maybe, if you bench him. But you have to do it. In the end, the best player wants to be there because you do supply that discipline. In the end, all the kids want discipline. That's the hidden thing. They will squawk the loudest, the best ones, but in the end, they want the player who will, the coach that will discipline them. So, yeah.
And from the coaching – from the coaching point of view, you know, it's. Do you think in today's world, we just saw the NCAA basketball tournament end, and we've seen the carousel of coaches being fired because however much they're winning, you know, UCLA basketball coach, a couple others, however much they're winning, it's not enough. In this day and age, if we're sending that message at that level, is the trickle down from that message to these to kids all over the place that hey, winning's the most important thing and the development's not?
Yeah, I mean, we always have this saying, if we got Joe on the tennis court, we always tell him, this is not the Joe show today, you know? Or you've got to start them when you're younger. But, yeah, I mean, the bottom line on the coaching, too, you were in coaching, and what helped me early in my coaching career, you're afraid of being fired. Everybody is, but I heard a basketball coach say that any good coach has either been fired or they're waiting to be fired. And when you take that approach, then it's sort of you understand that you've got to be the, you know, you're in charge. It doesn't mean in a bad way, but it's, look, the players, even the strongest wild stallions want fences, Bruce. We know that. And you've got to, it's tough, man. When you got to bench your number one player and you take some hits and lose a few matches, but you got to do it or you can't walk around with your head up. And I just hate to see it when I see a wimpy coach just sort of kowtows to, you know, an old baseball coach at Clemson said, the guy's dead now, Bill Wilhelm. He coached there 37 years, but he used to just said, you know, I've never been one to bow down at that altar of, you know, prowess as far as, you just can't do it if you ever want to be worth your salt. I've seen coaches sort of give 12 and 14-year-old kids leeway. You can't do that. You know.
Well, what about the parents? What about the – I go to a tennis tournament, and I watch a kid play, and I see a kid chuck the racket on the court. Now, okay, maybe my dad was an old-fashioned guy, but if I chucked the racket on the court, he'd have walked on the court, he'd have picked up the racket, he said to the kid I was playing, hey, sorry, but he's not using this racket anymore. He threw it. This match is over, and he'd have dragged me to the car, and home we go. I watched this happen into this. So you only throw the racket once, and you never throw it again. And in this world today, I see parents allowing the kids, tennis kids, and other sports probably as well, except in another sport, the coach has the bench to teach with, but the parent brings the kid to the tournament. So in effect, the parent a lot of time is kind of the coach. The kid's acting like a complete ass on the court. The language is bad. The conduct is bad. The sportsmanship's bad. If you don't have a parent who's willing to pull the kid off the court in that environment, what leverage as a coach can you have then?
Well, you know, first of all, there's real pain from losing, and then there's the fake pain. And the pouty pain are the little sissy pain where kids pout and bounce the rackets and, you know, and pout and complain and that stuff. The whining is the stuff you got to shoot down. And you hope parents do that. But, you know, I relish when a kid is in such pain. I've seen kids bust the racket up, and I was glad that he did it afterwards, you know, because he was in such pain. And that sounds wrong, but he was in such pain. He was in agony, and he basically, that the real, real pain from losing, sometimes it boils over on the kids. But this fake stuff, the pouty stuff, Bruce, you just gotta sit on that and sit on it hard. If parents don't sit on it, well, that doesn't have anything to do with the coaches. You know, it's just going to make coaches' job harder. I mean, but the coaches got to sit on it. We always tell them that when they start whining, hey, you want a little cheese and crackers to go along with the whine there? You know, and we say, don't whine, don't complain, get better. You know, don't get mad, get better. You know, we have a few things we pull out of our hats there. But you've got to get the culture to where the kids, look, it's about honoring the game. It's about honoring the game. You know, a musician would never, ever pout when his piano wasn't playing right or something. You honor the violin, you honor the piano, you honor your artwork, you honor your profession. And this tennis is not set up. You honor it, it honors you. It's not set up for your comfort or your enjoyment or what you can get out of it. You must honor it first, and then it honors you.
Well, I got a couple. I've been reading some emails here, and while I've got you there, a couple of these are kind of areas that I consider you an expert on, so why don't we tackle a few of these together. Got an email here that says, Dear Coach Lipka, going through the latest ITA rankings, to the best count with the research I've done, it looks like there are about 15 Americans in the top 50. Is this a good thing, a bad thing, or indifferent in your opinion? Chuck, you got an opinion on that?
You know I do. I mean, I've been fighting it for 25 years. And, you know, I'm the first one is against regulations. I just think regulations are awful in the whole scope of our country. Regulations are awful if they kill initiative, kill energy, kill people. It's like regulations the way that we reward tournament. I'm on this thing now where, you know, we award points. The USTA, they pick and lose the chooser, the winners, with the tournaments, the way this point structure, it's top-down. I'm against top-down. All right, but the bottom line on the regulation, so people will say, well, isn't that regulation if you said only two foreigners? Look, just like our economy, we're being raped, and that's a strong word, but we're being raped by international, look, all of our money, all of our resources. We're spending, okay, if you have a women's team, for example, I'm not going to use any particulars, but if women's team's all foreign, you basically have $500,000 a year of taxpayer dollars going out the window. And look, for what? Winning a tennis match? You got to be kidding me. You got to be kidding me. Bruce, I used to ask my guys, I said, why do you think that Clemson University spends nearly $500,000 a year in scholarships and funding and coaches' salaries and everything, is it because we bring money in? Not a penny. Not
right.
A penny. Well, does anybody really know how you guys are doing?
Nope.
Well, let me ask you guys, and I ask them, do any of you know who won women's NCAA last year? Only one guy knew that Georgia Tech had won, and they were in our conference. There are tennis players they didn't even know. Nobody cares, Bruce. And the point is that 15 out of 60 are American. That's pathetic. And it's, the point is, we got to address this issue. We got to get it on the table. We got to have the fight. We got to have the battle. We got to stop mamby-pambying around, Bruce, and saying, oh, well, listen, the foreign guys bring a lot to the table. And everything. But look, I'm sorry, all the mills shut down in South Carolina, too, because the jobs all went to China. Well, maybe you could blame South Carolina for not having it, but all the jobs going to China is not right. So, yeah, you know what? I want regulation to protect the United States' personal interest here. You know, I don't like that. Now, look, nobody wants regulation and other things that are just stupid. You know, just stupid things. You know, we want individual freedoms for things that are just so silly, but we hate regulation, Bruce. But, man, I don't know. We got to talk about it anyway. You know, there's a thing, and when I first started coaching, an old, wise swimming coach told me. He said, look, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. You can sure in the heck make him miserable while he's not drinking. You know,
yeah.
The point is we need to make these coaches miserable who are just importing, you know, pros from other countries. I mean, our infrastructure
looks like,
down, man.
The word on the street is that the USTA is entering the fray and addressing.
They are. I was at the meeting. They are. It's pretty cool.
Well, tell us about the meeting. What went on at the meeting? Instead of me hearing rumor, tell us fact.
Dave Haggerty got up in front of about 2,000 people in the big auditorium and said he put the numbers up there. And he was being lenient. I think he only said 35% of foreign players. But that was D3 included. And he didn't include, most of the Americans people put on their team now is just for window dressing anyway. The main players are from other countries. And Bruce, I'm not getting around the issue here, but let me explain this. If you're the top 50 or 60 in the United States and you're in the men's, you'll get a scholarship somewhere. But if you're 60 on down, you have to compete against 100 other countries who, by the way, their federations are recruiting our college coaches to recruit their players. And, you know, the coaches think their status goes on because they bring in somebody from Brazil or Zimbabwe or China or Thailand or something. It looks good on the resume maybe for the short term. But Haggerty got up there in front of everybody and he put these numbers up and he said, look, we need to do some things and we need to do it with initiatives. Now, with that, I got to talk to Christian, a couple of Virgil Christian,
right, Virgil,
and Scott Schultz, and those guys, and they're on it, and everybody understands that this is killing our infrastructure. This is the necessary stepping stone, number one, from junior tennis to professional tennis, but more so, it is the goal for every kid who plays American tennis to play on a college team. So what the deal is, Bruce, is that, you know, it's killing us, and everybody knows it. It's killing the infrastructure. So what Haggerty and those guys have decided to do, and I think it's great, is they're providing initiatives to American players and American teams and teams coached by Americans who want American players on their teams, Bruce. And now you do that by making an All-American, USTA All-American American team, you know, instead of having an All-American team with guys from 38 different countries, and none of them are Americans, none of them are going to stay around here. Most of them aren't. And then you go from there, Bruce. You go to the fact that they're doing some nice camps and training for the top 32 players or whatever in American tennis, and that gives hope for 50 or 60 American players. And they're just creating some things for incentives, and they're incentivizing. They can't penalize, so they incentivize. Go ahead.
Well, I've got the rankings. I pulled them up, and I'm thinking something looks funny about the rankings. And I just realized what it was because I pulled out an old scorebook I had from 1993. It's next to my desk. And I pulled out the rankings in there. And the rankings used to have rank, player, school, hometown. And now the rankings only have rank, player, school. No hometowns anymore. Is that a move by the ITA so that it's really not publicized how many foreign guys there are?
See, baby, sounds like a little political correct BS to me, man. I'm just telling you the way it is. That's not... Bruce, come on. If it smells wrong, looks wrong, it's probably wrong. You know, and it's you know, that's done. Come on. Oh, my. Why they... No hometown because they don't want somebody to say it's a foreign player.
And I've diligently searched to see, and there aren't really rankings per se in, you know, wrestling ranks the wrestlers a little bit by weight, but, you know, and they list top time finishes in swimming and track, but no other sport really has an individual ranking like we do, where, you know, right now in the current rankings, they ranked 125 players in men's singles. And in the current team rankings, they rank 75 teams, you know, which, of course, is a lot more than they used to rank back in the dark ages.
That's stupid. That's not smart. That's not smart.
Seems like too many.
Oh, it's stupid. It's look, I'm calling it the way it is. It's not smart. Because when you rank 75 teams, you basically, and I made the statement, whenever you champion the weak, you end up weakening your real champions. Let me tell you how this works two ways. First of all, it was a lot better when they ranked 25 teams the way they do in football and basketball. Then you have honorable mention. You might be one of those 10 honorable mention teams, and you can look like you're 30 or 26. But when you rank 75 teams, people, it's embarrassing if you're out of those teams rank from 30 on, let's say 35 to 75, that's 40 teams, probably 30 of them are very good schools. You know, you might have an Alabama or a Clemson or somebody in there. It's embarrassing. Coaches get fired when it's up there every day, left at work number 58. Now, who wants to be 58 in anything? It's like, oh, I'm a third string, or I'm a third string quarterback at my high school. Oh, by the way, my ranking's number 114 in college tennis. Well, who wants to be number 114? You need to have.
Is it not a dumbing down?
Excuse me. Oh, come on! It dumbs down
everything.
It's
just another dumbing down.
It's another dumbing down. And so what we have, we glorify mediocrity, and you know, it's aggravating. And this is part of the reason. We have everybody in the U.S. is pretty good. Nobody is great, you know. And it's on and on. Just our whole society, Bruce, is like this. I'm on a little bit of a rant today because I've been, you know, I get so upset watching politics and the day.
Is the bar here set way too low?
Well, what do you think? I mean, the proof's in the pudding. Come on, we're getting a crap beat out of us by Serbia, you know. So now hopefully next week we'll get, you know, do Serbia in the Davis Cup. But, man, let's go, USA. We don't want some country as big as Connecticut or Rhode Island whipping on us. I mean, Bruce, that's disgusting. You know, you can say, well, you know why they win? They're hungry. You know why they win? Okay? It's a big deal in Serbia to play tennis. And they win because they have great role models who've worked their butts off. They're hungry, and they work. You know, we want pedigrees and rankings, and we want something that looks like it's excellent on the outside.
Well, you bring that up there. You mentioned ranking. Let's stay there for one quick second. You mentioned ranking, and I got an email here that says, Dear Coach Lipka, it would appear that the flaw in the U.S. junior tennis development system is the ranking system. Why? ? Because American players are always playing to a number. I want to get into a level 5 and get a high enough ranking to get into a level 3. I get into a level 3, I want a high enough ranking to get into a level 1. I get into a level one. I want a high enough ranking to make the nationals. I make a high ranking in the nationals. I now want a better rank in my second year of the age group. Nowhere in that equation is the player development formula to develop your abilities. It's all about getting to a number. Question mark, question mark, question mark. Am I wrong here? How do you see it? I couldn't agree more with the comment.
The guy said perfect. You know, I can't add anything to that. That's exactly right. And we are into the U.S., into presentation. My statement I wanted to make was that we are creating rhinestones, not diamonds. We build rhinestones effortlessly with presentation and trying to build pedigree. Diamonds are made through pressure and time. And it is done with, like you mentioned, you know, the Harry Hopman training role in things. It's made through toughness. Your comfort bears no fruit when you are trying to train excellence. It's not about comfort. It is not about presentation. It's not about what it looks like on the outside. It comes from burning desires down deep inside. And we're just, you know, our whole society is into presentation and mediocrity, and we have an 80% paralysis here in our country.
All right, Chuck, stay with me here. I'm going to break for a commercial. Then we're going to bring on a couple of fellows. We're going to bring Ray Brown on, who's going to give us an update of what's going on with him in the USTA. So we'll have two USTA-involved people. Then we'll come back to a couple of the questions I might have here, and we've got some callers lined up who have some questions. So, folks, I just had Chuck Creasy here answering a few questions. I've got, I got 20 more emails we probably won't get to today. Have a couple other notes. Actually, someone sent a mailed letter to me. Chuck, when was the last time you got a piece of mail? But that's why I know this is from an old school guy. We're going to take a quick break for a commercial. If you want to call in, 714-583-6853. When we come out of the commercial, we're going to get an update of what's going on with the complaint filed by Dr. Ray Brown in the USTA. We've got Chuck Creasy here with us. We've got a couple other people lined up, folks. Stay with us as we go to this commercial.
This is Jason Haynes, CEO of the UR Tennis Network. We are proud to announce the 2013 summer camp season has begun. At ussportcamps.com, you can plan out a Nike tennis camp experience. These are offered to both adults and juniors for day and overnight camps. Visit ussportcamps.com to pick up a brochure and join over 50,000 youth who say yes to our summer camp experience. Join a Nike tennis camp at www.ussportcamps.com or call us at 1-800-NIKE-CAMPS. In 2013, let our summer camps be your victory. Choose the Nike tennis camps and take your game to the next level.
All right, folks, welcome back to the show today. We've had Chuck Creasy with us a little bit, answering some questions, touching some hot topics there, foreign players in college tennis, America as a whole, America's place within the tennis global population. We've got Ray Brown with us now. Ray, you there? Is that you, Ray? No, I think I might have clicked on the wrong one. Hang on there a second, folks. I might have lost him there for a second. Let me try this number. Let's see who we got here, Chuck.
Here.
This is Ray. Is that you? Yeah.
Hear me?
Got you now. Yep.
Okay. Here we are.
Got you. Welcome to the show, Ray. Thanks for coming on today. And, you know, for those who weren't with us a couple weeks ago, Ray was explaining to us, and we talked a little about a complaint that you filed with the USOC, who is really in charge of the USTA. I guess that's the best way to say it. Give us an update of what's going on there, Ray.
All right. Well, of course, we file a complaint, and then, of course, the opposition filed a motion to dismiss the complaint. And they listed, you know, a whole bunch of reasons and so on and so forth, and then I filed a response or a rebuttal to all of those reasons that actually it's Howard Jacobs who filed it for on behalf of the USGA. And then it was sent off this week, I guess on the Tuesday, to the USOC. The USOC notified us immediately upon sending it off. Howard asked to provide a brief or an administrative brief in response to my rebuttal. Yesterday, we received word from the USOC that Howard was denied his request to file a brief. And then it said that the hearing will go forward. And that was stated ambiguously. I thought it was a hearing to go forward on the issues of the complaint, but it was not. It was a hearing to go forward on whether or not there would be a motion. They would look at the motion for dismissal. Then this morning, I get another clarification that there will be no formal hearing for dismissal, but rather there will be a three-way conversation between Howard, myself, and Gary Johansson of the USOC. Exactly what that means, I don't know. They could have accepted, granted the motion for dismissal outright if they had chosen to, but they didn't. So there's going to be another conversation between the three of us in which the associate counsel for the USOC wants to hear the arguments more directly. And so that's where we stand right now.
Interesting stuff. Well, let's put your complaint filer hat aside. And let's put your neuroscience more hat back on for a second. Chuck, you there also?
I'm here, man. It's great listening.
I've got an email. I'd like to get both of your opinions. I feel like Chuck's opinion is scientific and based on a lot of experience. And Ray, your opinion is also scientific, and you've seen some experience. I've got an email here. Coach Lipko, aren't some players just born to be better? Is a champion born or is a champion made? ? I mean, really, what's the truth? Ray, first scientifically, either you got it or you don't, or can we develop it in people?
You can develop it in people, and paleoanthropology is probably the place to look to get a better insight in this. Now, there are some people who are born with exceptional connections, neural connections in their motor system that allow them to learn and begin performing very early, and other people may be born without those, but the nature of the what we call neuroplasticity allows a person with a great deal of desire to cause his own brain or her own brain to rearrange itself in accordance and recover and actually produce some of the same connections that the person may have been genetically born with. So it's up to an individual. Of course, there can be extremes. I mean, if a person is born without an arm and a leg, then that's going to be a greater limitation. But given that they're a whole human being and born and they're normal, desire is probably the most powerful factor in neuroplasticity. It can cause the brain to completely rearrange itself in very significant ways and in startling ways. So it doesn't really matter if you weren't born to be great, you know, born with all this neural wiring to that's favorable to hitting a tennis ball. The desire can allow you to produce in your brain those neural connections and the motor connections you need to achieve a very high level. In fact, even become a champion or a champion of one of the majors. So the limitation is minor, let's say, at least among normal human beings.
Chuck, what's experience tell you over the years? Champions born or made?
I'm glad to hear Ray speak. You know, he's got such a depth about this. But, you know, in coaching, you know, it's always ability, desire, opportunity. God-given ability, opportunities given by parents, coaches, teachers, and then the desire of the individual, all playing a part. And, you know, I heard many years ago, I heard Bobby Bowden, you know, the football coach of Florida State, give a talk, and he gave a talk about the it factor, and his statement was, you don't know what it is, but you know when someone has it and when someone doesn't have it. Now, it is sometimes kids are a little more clutch than others, and they smell the finish line better than others. About 10, probably 15% of the kids, in my experience, do this naturally. Probably 60% have to be taught how to do these things through working day in, day out. Some kids just never get it. But the it also is, like Ray was saying, the building. And Ray, correct me if I'm wrong, I love that book, The Talent Code. It talks about the building of the myelin tissue. When a person is hungry to make things happen, the brain reaches out and grabs, inquisitive mind reach out and grabs and redevelops its structure almost to find. It seeks what the brain starts seeking, and the mind is inquisitive and hungry to find the answers, then that's how our kids get brilliant. And we are, of course, dumbing that down with the cell phones and the computers because kids, the thing that we've all lost is inquisitive minds and the depth. So, Ray, you correct me if I'm wrong on that. That's sort of my take on it.
Well, I could probably more or less refine what the statement and how it all works. Myelination is governed by what's called an oligodendrocyte. It's a form of a glial cell. The glial cells are under the influence of desire of a person, what drives a person, the limbic system, or what we call the reptilian brain, is actually the amphibian brain, 450 million years old. So with tremendous desire, the brain can send out calcium waves to distant parts of the neural anatomy and cause the oligodendrocytes to change the myelination on the neurons. And by changing the myelination, the signal strength can rise and fall in that neuron. And as a result of just those signal strength changes, the person can develop an entirely new ability. And so there's more
to
the detail.
So here's my question. Here's my question for both of you. I think I know what the answer is, but I'm going to ask the question anyway because it's my show and I get to do that. Players out there today, it would seem that if we weren't talking about tennis and we were talking about finding food and working in order to feed yourself, people would work at a certain level of intensity because it's survival. So can we say that, Chuck, those people you've experienced or Dr. Brown, the science of it, that we just have very few people who have that depth of urgency or intensity to their training in tennis. I'm only talking about tennis right now since we're not producing a lot of players, and I say we, I mean the United States, that the American tennis player probably, with the numbers we have, don't have a sense of urgency or a sense of intensity to what they're doing, and that's the only thing holding them back. Because it's not about athletic ability, as you say, given a full-functioning human being. Is that statement I just made accurate scientifically, Ray?
It turns out it is, and there's some interesting biological evidence. There was a great National Geographic special on lions behaving badly in which it was discovered that lions, cubs, if they're raised in an environment of plenty, lose their motivation to kill and eat. And this particular pride of lions, these guys would stand around and wait for the mother to kill the food, and then they'd come over and eat. And it wasn't until the bounty, the amount of food that was available in that environment drastically changed, that these lions became motivated by either, you know, eat or die, and their behavior changed. So you see this in the family, in the home. You can actually precondition a child to have very little motivation from the family environment. And you take that very same child and you just take them out in the middle of the woods and say you're going to sink or swim, that motivation could change dramatically. In the military service, places like Special Forces and Marines, that part of the brain is affected. It's not like they're trying to be physically brutal, but they are putting a person in a position of regaining that motivation that will cause the person to start, you know, acting on survival. And that can be restarted in a tennis program if the parents are willing to restart it in a tennis program. But it starts in the family and really starts around age 5.
Chuck, are we just
yeah,
for lack of a better word, we're just soft?
Yeah, sure we are. You know, it's really good stuff. There's an old poem or something, and I wrote that I got it from Coach Bill Hodges, actually, was at Mercer at that time. He was used to be coach at Indiana State, and actually was Larry Bird's coach in 79 at Indiana State. But I had known him, and he gave me this poem about the eagle baby eagle that fell into the chicken coop, and he scratched like a chicken, walked around like a chicken, and years later, he grew up to be an eagle, but he was with the chickens. He used to see the eagles soaring above and said, boy, I wish I could do that. That was sort of that statement. But
right.
I don't think you can make an eagle into a pigeon or a chicken. But it's hard to make a chicken into an eagle. But what Ray is saying, you can sure make the guy fly a lot better if they're hungry. And
right.
Just a real quick, Bruce, you had this experience. When our electricity went off for 5 days last summer, it was
yep.
a tough deal. Now, we had all these millions of people in the D.C. area without electricity. The first day it was just like, whoa, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? By the second day, I figured out, hey, I can get down here and I can get shaved and I can get us water. And my wife was going down to the lake and bringing up water to flush the toilets. By the third day, she had it rolling. By the fourth day, it was like having a camp out. By like the fifth day, we didn't give a flip whether they turned on electricity or not. So what Ray was saying is that human beings adapt. You got to make an environment. We should not make cush environments. I like the Spartan type of environments for training with our kids, where it is not pleasant to train there, where it is tough to train there, where tennis, hitting the tennis ball becomes the most exciting thing they do during the day. You know, and Bruce, you had this as a coach too, when we talked about used to keep kids in dorms and things and in places, and they were hungry dogs looking at fresh meat when they stepped out on the court. So,
yeah. Well, you know, and this is, we talked about the Florida. We got a caller here who's been waiting. We're going to jump to in a second, 703-905, since I have you two experts with me. We'll field this question, but real quick, one statement I'll make is, best recruit I might have ever had, when I say best, I don't mean talented. I don't mean won matches. I mean most highly motivated to do anything I asked him to do. Happened to have been a player from Eastern Europe whose options were to be in college, and I wrote a letter, and he was excused from the Army, or he would have to go home and serve in the Army and maybe end up in Kosovo or somewhere like this. So you talk about a highly motivated guy. Hey, I'd say you have to hit 100 serves every day. Kids hit, I said, if you don't hit your serves, you can't be part of this program, and I'm not renewing your letter, and you go join the Army. Kid hit 100 serves every day. Didn't have to ask him twice. So there's that motivation.
Bruce, we need a draft back in this country. If we had to draft back, if we would reinstill the draft, we'd have better grades in school, kids would be industrious, our tennis players would be training much harder. It's real silly, I think. You know. So
let me grab this call with you guys here. Let me see who we got here. I've got 703-905. You on the line?
Yes, on the line. How you doing, Bruce?
I'm good, thanks. Welcome to the show. Who's this?
This is Mike Scherer.
Oh, hey, Mike. Welcome to the show. Thanks for calling in today. I've got some panels of experts here today. Do you have any questions, some comment you'd like to make for us to throw around a little bit?
Absolutely. I have a couple questions for you guys, actually. Wondering if you guys think there is a formula that you need between a coach and a player to develop great players, and meaning that could the greatest coach in the world create a great player with, you know, that has average talent and athleticism, or, you know, on the other hand, can the most talented player in the world reach his or her potential with, you know, a below average or a bad coach? So what do you guys think the appropriate balance is here?
Chuck?
That's a great question. Absolutely. And, yeah, all of the above, yes and no. I mean, we all have had the talented guy, and we've done crummy jobs at times with our most talented people because we weren't able to figure out that thing that made them, or helped them, led them to be internally driven. And, you know, until the player has that internal mechanism that seeks out excellence, what we do is just window dressing. Or I shouldn't say that. What we do as facilitators is basically trying to lead them to the stream to drink. We're trying to constantly point those things out that they need for the next step. And all we have is maybe a little bit more experience, a few more battles. But in the end, you cannot make somebody great who does not have that thing inside of them that wants to be great. And, boy, you can see some people play great at talent, plays great, big at times, but you seldom see them in the big time.
So, is that desire, that thing inside, does that weigh more heavily than just, you know, talent and athleticism?
Yeah. Ray, go ahead, but I absolutely, without a doubt. Most genius is done by these very, very, think of the genius things that, you know, whether it was the great works of art or the great music or whatever, it's all established from passion, you know, the passion. And a lot of those people who wrote the most passionate music, the most passionate artists, had really troubled lives. I mean, their passion was so deep But I mean, whether it was a Vincent Van Gogh or something, think of the passion that is so deep that drives people. But I know where you're going with that. Everybody can't understand, you know, Tim Tebow, why, you know, he'll never play maybe quarterback again in the NFL or something. But the guy, he knows how to win and, you know, where does talent max out, you know, at the top level. But I don't think that's our problem. Our problem is mediocrity, grooming mediocrity. We're experts at grooming mediocrity in the U.S. right now.
Yep.
Ray, you got an opinion there?
Yeah, right. Well, first of all, I put passion first. I would agree completely with Chuck on that point. And I'd probably say something more that he probably will also agree with. He just may have left it out. How you relate to the player is one of the most important things of all. How do you connect, relate, understand their situation, and discover whether or not the passion is there but has never had the opportunity to blossom. So I think those two are by far your biggest factors. And the player's potential to have passion, if it's not already there, but it's hidden, and the coach's ability to tap and reach the person individually. And it's not about a bunch of technique and, you know, hitting a bunch of balls. And by the way, 100 serves a day, I wouldn't give the time of day for that. I mean, I talk about 1,000. But anyway, it's knowing how to connect with the person in a way that they feel that you care about them, you understand them, you can share things with them, you can share their situation, and you can bring them to understand how important achievement, personal achievement, can be for them and for their life.
Is the coaches, it seems to me from the, you know, I don't have as much life experience as you or Chuck. That means to the listeners out there, I'm much younger than them. But it seems to me in my limited experience that my ability to connect with a student, any student, as a college coach, a pro player, a club player, anybody, if they're a kid, if they're a young person, is related to the way that they've learned to communicate, the boundaries they've had from their parents, the upbringing they've had, the respect that they carry for authority figures or teachers. So it seems like there needs to be some background done by the family if I'm to be able to connect at times, or not true, Ray?
Culture is significant. Family is significant. The first 5 years of a child's life can shape their whole outlook that may require significant effort to change. So a lot of your speech, your comments broke up there. I didn't get it, so I'm sort of guessing at the pieces that I missed. But
I was just saying that it seemed, basically in a nutshell, I can be a great communicator, but if a child is raised in an environment where they don't understand boundaries or respect for the teacher, respect for the coach, then it's going to be trouble for me to connect with the child.
Yeah, absolutely. The only way to deal with that is what I call, is what's known in the world of psychology as radical behaviorism. And it takes a bombshell maybe to change that.
Michael, I'll give you three comments to leave with today. Number one, my belief is that coaches don't make players as much as player makes a player. If the player's hungry and the player will do the work, they'll be good. Number two, the coaches really can be a great guide for the player if there's a great connection there, as Ray said. And number three, Michael, just remember when you're playing, lines are in, okay?
I have one more question for you guys, if that's okay, or if you need to go on, that's fine. So if you guys are coaching, more for Bruce and Chuck here, if you are coaching a junior tennis player between, let's say, the age of 13 and 15 years old who, you know, you believe has professional potential, what does his or her tournament schedule, travel schedule, daily training schedule sort of look like?
Chuck?
Yeah, just real quick. You know, I had on, Mark Bay up there in Chicago about 4 weeks ago. He said it best. This is his statement, but we all sort of do that. Tournament schedule, it's a third in old school coaching. Third of the time they got to carry the trophies home. That could be the YMCA Open. It doesn't matter. They don't learn how to win without winning. Third of the time you give tournaments that inspire them above their level. Third of the time with their level. But Mark said preparation tournaments, and I think he called it main events, and then, confidence tournament. I forget the description he used, but by four different levels. But it's a mistake. They'll always play up. It's tremendously a mistake. You know, with that, then the training, if you have a top player, again, people are able to do tremendous feats. I mean, tremendous feats. You know, you see kids, people jumping out of helicopters and going down mountains on snowboards now and things and everything. But do not be afraid of overworking kids in practice situations. Stretch them. And then what you're doing as a coach is you're just basically help them build their capacity, which also gives them more confidence under pressure. And then the competition is where they find out about themselves. Lastly, I've always believed the coach's job, we can prevent our players from losing by building their fundamentals, but they need to teach themselves how to win. So give them those matches. There's no bad win in tennis. I used to have my number six guy beat the manager a couple times before a big match, and it would always give them confidence. There's no bad win in tennis. So I hope I answered you, Michael. You know,
Michael, I think the key that I take to the question you just asked is if someone was 13 to 15 and aspires to be a professional, aspires to be a world-class player, you know, which to me is nothing more than developing your potential. I think the key to the equation is that the tennis player not aspire to play college, not aspire to be a pro, but aspire to develop to their full potential and do whatever it takes to do that. Now, having said that, to choose the tournament play, I like a 2-1, at a 2-1 or 3-1 win-to-loss ratio is what I've always gone by. It's time to move up levels. So if I've got someone whose record at the end of several tournaments is 12-4, it's time to move up to a higher level to where they get back to a lower ratio of wins and losses to grow again. I mean, I would recommend for any kids in the U.S. who want a great tennis experience to develop their game, because unfortunately we don't have level-based play in the U.S. I tell this to the college kids all the time who want to be pro players. Don't chase the ATP points. Pack a bag. Go to France. Get a French ranking. You could play two tournaments a week, sometimes three tournaments a week. It's level-based. You're going to start off always against guys you should have success against, and then you're going to play against guys who you're going to struggle more against, and then you're going to play against guys who you won't beat, so that ratio can kind of maintain itself. But I think that's a great experience for players to have who really want to be great. Training-wise,
gotcha.
Every spare minute. I hate the excuses. You get up for school at 6:30. You know what? Get up at 6:15. Get up 15 minutes earlier, 15 minutes a day. Those 5 days during the week, all of a sudden you've added an hour and 15 minutes of workout time where you can do something, jump rope, do exercises, do something. So if you're really hungry, that's where the passion comes in. Michael, thanks for calling in today. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks,
all right. Hey, guys, we got a couple other callers. Why don't we grab them here and see what's what? 404-735, are you on the line? 404-735, you there?
Yes, I am. Hi, this is
Joe. Who do we have today? Hey, Joe DeFore, how are you?
Joe DeFore. Chuck Creasy, how you doing? Ray Brown, I haven't met you, but... Bruce, thanks. I met you before a long time ago, but thanks for letting me
be on the show. My career win in the quarterfinals of the Southern Open in Huntsville, Joe DeFore.
that was before the tournaments were sanctioned, Bruce.
I'm still counting it. What can we do for you today, Joe?
Just a real quick question. You guys were speaking about the academy model, and I, with personal experience from Chuck Creasy, some of your methods that I appreciate as a former player, wanted to get into some. Could you give us some examples of how you're kind of what you're kind of doing now with your methodology with respect to the junior development in the current environment? With how are you doing things differently, and can you be specific, fairly specific?
Chuck.
Joe, it's a pleasure. One of the best human beings I ever coached, and absolutely maxed your potential as a man and as a teammate. And I think every team you played on won an ACC championship. So, thanks. You and Kent Kinnear, the Twin Towers. But, hey, Joe, here's the deal now. I mean, as far as the physical training part of it, I work nonstop on tempo training. With the kids, what I've learned is that, and I don't want to go back into history, but the big rackets at first, Nobody knew how to use them. Then everybody thought it was just power and first strike tennis. The last 10 to 15 years, people learned how to move on the court. And you have a situation like Djokovic and Wawrinka in the quarterfinals of the Australian Open. They had a 17-ball rally, and they showed the thing so many times on Match Point that I would time it, and they made 16 or 17 rallies in 15 seconds. So I realized, 10 or 15 years ago that the key is the ability to play fast and be able to maintain the tempo. With that, you have to use the Wardlaw directionals as far as, usually hitting balls across the body, across the body, across the body, and you don't even let the players go up the line until the ball sits up. But I work nonstop on getting the kids to play faster, and it's showing some good benefit there. And I think, Joe, the big thing to train in players, you have to create a culture. And, you role model the kids who are working hard, and you've just got to create a culture where kids will do anything. Hey, listen, I just a joke thing here. I have a thing called the Miyagi drill, Mr. Miyagi drill. And kids will say, what's this? I said, did you see Mr. Miyagi trying to catch a fly with chopsticks? A man who can do that can do anything.
Yeah.
And so when you overload the kids, they say, what are we doing? I said, we're doing a Miyagi drill. You can do anything. I once saw a man at the state fair eat 52 hot dogs, too. You can do anything if you set your mind to it. So, Joe, I'm doing tempo drills primarily, other than the stuff you know about me already.
Yeah.
Anything
that's
else,
good.
Joe? Any other questions?
No, that's good. I just wanted to say hello, and thank you guys for letting me be on, and thanks, Chuck, for...
thanks, Joe. Hey, holler at me sometime, man. I miss you, man. I'd love to get down there to Atlanta and see you.
Yeah, sorry I missed you last time. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for calling in. All right.
Yeah,
we got another call here. Let's try this one here. We've got 434327. 434327, you on the line?
Yep, that's me. Hello.
Hello, who
hello,
do you got?
Hello. This is Davey
here. Oh, hey, Davey, how are you? How's things down in Virginia?
I'm good. I'm in Charlottesville. I appreciate you letting me on the last few minutes of your show, Bruce. It's always great. I talked to Chuck last week. It's good to have you guys back on. If I can, I've got some kids who I'm working with, and I'd love to hear an either-or answer quickly to this basic. Are college coaches, at least in the middle side of the Division I's and or high ends of Division II's, are they looking for, if you had a choice of potential and or current ranking, which would you currently favor? Because I've got some kids who I think have great potential, but they haven't been able to get out to the Kalamazoos of the world or do the ITF circuits in other areas. So great potential, good kids, but what can I encourage them to look for when they're looking into colleges?
Chuck,
if you don't have a flashy sign out front of your restaurant, and it's not a franchise or popular, you got to do a little more selling. So, the coaches, what they do, look at the rankings first because it's easy. And then the ratings, my last 10 years, I didn't look at rankings hardly at all. Maybe I made a few mistakes, but that was just because I was on a philosophical move. I wanted to hire the thing, get the right kids, not just the best kids. And that's, I knew I had to have the right kids that understood me and the way I did things, but that's just me. But I think tennisrecruiting.net is doing a wonderful job. The kids pay attention to that. But other than that, I've got the same situation up here in College Park. We've got to try to find places for four or five kids that are late bloomers and they're coming on fast. You got to get on the phone and talk to the coaches and convince them. And a lot of the coaches are scared. They don't want to look. If you take a chance on a kid, it means they're taking a chance. If a kid with a high ranking doesn't pan out, they can blame the kid. But it takes some guts to recruit the kid without the ranking, and you just got to get on the horn and talk to those coaches and really convince them. And we really have to do that a lot with some kids up here. So you just got to call the coaches personally. It's got to become a relationship.
Well, it's nice to hear they're receptive to that, because I'd still like to think the days of the walk-on are around. Thank you.
Yeah, Davey, I think there are a couple challenges that go on. Number one, is depending on the school, because of Title IX, some programs have ceilings and they can only carry X number of kids. You know,
yeah.
which is tough for the walk on, as you say. You know, but having said that, I think you'd find that different coaches are going to philosophically be different. I mean, just particularly in this area, you know, a fellow like Jim Thompson down at Virginia Tech, you know, Jim's never afraid to give a guy a shot who's got the attributes that he's looking for.
That's a great,
you know,
yeah.
if a guy's hungry, if a guy's passionate, you know, me as a coach, Chuck, I don't know how you did it, but when I was coaching and somebody would tell me how much potential they had, and boy, they just can't wait till they get to college, then they're going to start really getting after it. I was always wary of that because I didn't understand why they weren't getting after it now. You know,
well, that's encouraging.
That would always bother me. Now, if I could understand what someone was doing, maybe they were late to the game, okay? I mean, Gavin Sontag was a little late to the game, and he also played basketball in high school. You know, there's a fellow right now, the fellow who's ranked 4 in the country in college tennis, a fellow named Peter Kobelt, who plays at Ohio State. You know, I went and looked up his junior career, and, you know, he's barely in the top 60 in the country in the juniors, and right now he's ranked 4 in the country in college tennis. So obviously there are many stones out there that can be polished up into gems. You know, and I think as Chuck said, it's
Bruce,
a matter
Steven
of finding
Johnson,
a coach.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I'm looking
Steven
through
Johnson
the rankings
too, yeah.
here. I'm seeing a bunch of kids ranked from California, freshmen at smaller schools in California that, you know, maybe years ago before the foreign player would have gone to bigger schools, but kids who are just getting a chance and a coach who believes in them, and that's probably based, as they say, on the relationship that the coach you might have with other coaches, that you have the validity that they might give your boy a chance if you're able to vouch for him and the kids show the attributes that a coach wants to see.
Thank you very much.
Thanks,
Dave. Hey, David, thanks for calling in. We'll see you soon, right?
Yeah, coming up to see you soon, Bruce. Thanks a lot. Good luck, guys.
All
yeah,
right.
Man, thanks.
Chuck, it has been a pleasure to have you on. I got one more thing I want to touch on here before we let everybody run and go finish their lunch. One of the short questions that we have, which I'll give you my answer to, but I got an email here from a former player of mine who's teaching in Kansas City, and it's actually a letter from the parent of one of his students. Dear Bruce, in your opinion, what qualities and skills did some of your better athletes possess when they were coming in as freshmen, and how did you as a coach promote the growth of those individuals during their college experience under your leadership? So Chuck, when you had a guy who came in, I guess in a nutshell, if you had a guy with better athleticism than a guy with lesser athleticism, and all other things being equal, did you do anything different with them? Did you push them different, or you pushed everyone the same?
No, well, you know, the kids who are athletes know they're athletes. They've usually played other sports, and basically, whether it's Spider-Man that says with great power comes great responsibility, or, you know, if you look at from biblical sense, who has been given more, much as more is expected, an athlete understands that, and you do push them more. But you never, ever, ever, look, people can't see themselves, they only feel themselves. And good athletes know they feel things a little bit differently, but the kids who are not as good athletes, I think we do a great injustice or disservice if we ever put them into a box or you know, look, Larry Bird couldn't jump, could he? You know,
yeah.
I mean, you know, and, you know, it's good that he wasn't put into a box probably in French Lick, Indiana. And,
right.
You know, you people have different kinds of skills, and what I'm so excited what I heard Ray Brown talk about today, that you really just reframe your brain when there is great desire, you know. And
if the desire is there and the time,
yeah.
you
yeah.
have time. I'm talking, you know, taking a 27-year-old who's a 5-0 player who says, I want to be a world-class player, we might not have the time. Now, they could be a world-class player if they're 27 and the men's
yeah.
45 and over. You've got time.
Right.
But, you know, time and desire.
Yeah, I know.
Would you, for lack of a better word, would you sell your college program differently today than you did 15 or 20 years ago to appeal to recruits?
Yeah, I mean, we're always get smarter as we look back, we think, you know, but, you know, I don't have many regrets, you know, as far as trying to recruit the right kids. You know, you make mistakes here and there and you do some things a little better than not. But if I didn't do anything differently, you know, I think up front, letting the kids know what they're with experience, you can let the kids know that, look, here's what you have to buy into. This is what you have to commit to. This is what it is about. Now, if you don't want to do this, please step out now, then go through halfway and think that you're going to work yourself into it. I think those are the mistakes we make as coaches, is we assume all the kids grow up understanding things from the start and about how hard it is. Most of them think that they understand how hard it is, Bruce, as you know, but most of them don't. Once
no
they
idea.
Start climbing that mountain, here's the statement I always use in coaching. You never show kids completely the top of the mountain. You know, you keep fog on top of the mountain until they're too high up to turn back. But nowadays, kids are so smart with computers and things that you've got to show them Mount Everest, and you've got to say, now look, you can't, you know, just bail out when you get halfway up there, you know. And that's what I think the kids think they understand, but they don't. And so I think that's the, you know, probably off the top of my head, the way I would do it a little bit differently, Bruce.
You know, to who would you recruit if we're looking to promote higher levels of play in the U.S.? Now, I know there's no guarantee, but for me, I always be excited about a kid. I go recruit a boy and say, listen, this is what we're going to do. We're going to work out every morning from 6 o'clock until 6:45. Then you're going to get a shower and you're going to go to class, and then in the afternoon we're going to practice for an hour and a half. And, you know, and I'd lay the whole thing out up front, and because I was wanting a guy who wanted to be a pro tennis player, because I felt that you're going to go to school, you're going to get your degree. If you don't go to class, I'm going to suspend you from the team. These are non-negotiable things. But I want a guy who wants to play professional tennis because I felt like they would stick through it. Now, 5 times out of 10, once they heard the words, they nod their head and say, yeah, that's me, until all of a sudden, you know, I even had one kid, I'll never forget this, I had one kid from Chicago who I thought had great potential. He came down, Chuck, and we worked out, you know, back then we hadn't had that week thing yet where we could only do certain number of weeks a year and certain number of hours a week. So first day of school started, you know, we started practice the day before. So we did our first week of practice, and I used to do a little camping trip every year around one of the first weekends of school. We'd go out in the woods or rafting or camping and hang out a little bit. And we did our workout first in the morning at about 6 o'clock and got done at about 8 o'clock with everything we were doing. I said, all right, guys, Van leaves in a half an hour. And the boy said, all right, I just got to get some stuff from my room. I'll be right back. And we never saw the boy again. He just disappeared. He had 5 days of this, and he just thought, I don't know what I've just signed up for.
Right.
And that's
right.
The biggest, you know, I was always, and I had never to this day, I don't know that I can figure out just looking at somebody if they have that thing, that hunger, and will climb the mountain with me or won't.
That it, and that's why I always did Morning Madness, Bruce. The tradition started, as I told you last time, out of necessity. But basically, I always realized we did 2 to 3 weeks of early morning running before we hit a ball every fall. And there's pretenders and contenders, and everybody thinks they're a contender at first. But once you let the guys go through suffering first and the players go through suffering first to try to be on the team, the ones that made it entered the team with great, great pride and would not do anything to not honor that experience. And that's what bonds them today. Even my old graduates call themselves the 3 M's, the men of Morning Madness still. And it's a beautiful thing. But here's the point. You know, kids would drop out, like you said. I had 2 kids do 3 laps and run up the hill and sort of shoot me the bird as they were going to. I had things like that. And one guy say, hey, man, I didn't want all this. I just wanted, you know, 3 courts and you know, 3 balls and court time. And, you know, the point is everybody makes a great presentation now. Again, this is the Rhinestone Society. Everybody has a good pedigree and good image, Bruce, but when the rubber hits the road, you put it out there in front how hard something is going to be and let them taste it and then say, do you still want that? It's like Mr. Hoffman, my first 2 days working for him, Bruce, for $70 a week. he made me pick up balls the first 2 days. Now, he did that with everybody. A lot of the kids would hit the door and never, but, you know, and so that's a beautiful thing that you think in coaching you do, you know, and, you know, you go through the suffering first, the boot camp first, you know, and that's where the difference is made. And instead of suiting the kids up with a lot and giving them all the fluff first, you know, the presentation.
Well, the obvious question that I have in my head is that I don't know what the answer to it is maybe that's the influx of the foreign players, because maybe the U.S. kids have lost their hunger and the foreign kids do have the hunger, and that's why the American coaches in the college level are recruiting so many of the foreign kids.
Well, that's true. I mean, they have nowhere else to go when they come here from another country. But listen,
nowhere to go.
We are the United States of America, and we have it inside of us. But I just don't think that we are digging down there and finding it. You know, we need to speak to the king and the queen and the boys and the girls in our country and not speak to the little kid, Bruce. You know, and by golly, that's simple. We need to ask and expect and relish and applaud the excellence, man. It's just the mediocrity is dumbfounding that we have in our country. You know,
I hear people tell people too often what they can't do, particularly as a tennis player. You can't be a pro. So few make it. It's very tough to make it. You know, I don't want you to be disappointed.
Bruce, escort our best talent to the front of the line always. We are always propping up the people we pick and choose, and it's the social promotions, the participation trophies, escorting kids to the front of the line. You know, and it's disgusting that we treat people like hothouse flowers. We're creating hothouse flowers out of
they can't survive in the wild. Yeah,
I know. And Bruce, it's all there.
But then
the
problem then, Chuck, is that then some people go too far. You know, I've watched these videos like you probably have on the ESPN about this guy Mike Rice or whatever his name was, the coach at Rutgers who just got fired. You know. And there's a guy who's crossed the line between discipline and coaching and abuse. You know, so then, and people don't see a scale. You know, there's a scale that you can push the kids a lot harder than we do before. And that's one of the things Bill Timm always used to say in this country, though. The problem is that with coaches, people have got confused between what discipline is and what abuse is. And discipline, because a kid missed balls and you made him meet you early in the morning, or a kid didn't try in a court and you threw him off the court or suspended him or made him do running, you know, because suspended is probably what he wanted, so you made him do running or something.
Well,
you know, that's teaching discipline.
Bruce, there's a thing that there's nothing more pathetic than small people in big positions. We have socially promoted people, you know, in our society, our kids who look talented. We promote them without them paying the price. If I had not picked up balls for those days for Mr. Hopman, would I have relished that job as much, and would I relish my career? And I haven't even seen it on news. I heard about the guy getting fired or something up there. But Mike Leach out there at Texas Tech. Now, Bruce, would you have rather played for one of those guys or some coach that just was fluff and was just a nice guy to you? Now, I mean, that's... Which one would you want to play for? Knight, Lombardi?
I'd take passion every time.
Passion every time. I'll take passion that is misguided over fluff. We need passion in our...
Well, as Ray told us last week, you know, only 10% of the population are high achievers, you know, and that's, everyone else is just kind of moving along, and, you know, maybe we don't got the right 10% of the high achievers kids playing tennis yet, but we'll keep working on that.
Well, it's there, Bruce. This is the United States of America, and the greatest generation was my father and your father and mother, and they went through the Depression, the war, and they built this country on guts and hard work and honoring God and doing those things. And our kids grow up. They've got it inside of them. We just need to ask for it, demand it, and hold them to a higher standard and talk to the king and the queen, not the little boy and girl.
Yep. Well, Chuck, I can't thank you enough for coming on today and spending some time with us. And Ray Brown, wherever you are, thanks for coming on with us today. And
Bruce,
all of our callers who called in, and there's a couple that unfortunately I didn't get to. We got a call today here and a couple of emails I didn't get to, but we'll try to get to everybody in the future. Chuck, hopefully one day you'll join us again.
Bruce, I can't thank you enough. I love your show. I do listen to it just about every week. And thanks for the man you are, the leader you are, the coach you are. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Chuck. Have a great day.
Bye.
All right. All right, folks, that's today's show. We're going to wrap it up here. Thanks for listening in with us. We had some great callers today. You asked some great questions, but, you know, between Ray Brown and Chuck Creasy, I don't know if there's two better minds anywhere, two brighter people with more experience. So I think we're fortunate today to have those people here with us. Everybody get out there and hit some balls. Spring is going to arrive in the nation's capital soon, and when it does, we'll finally get outdoors. Hopefully the rest of you are having a great week. Everybody out there, take care.
Opinions stated by various contributors to the UR Tennis Network and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR Tennis Network. Participants are encouraged to use their own discernments and draw their own conclusions. All information, products, and services offered by the UR Tennis Network are for personal use only. The UR Tennis Network does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of information contained within the network. Any products or services provided for should be used solely for entertainment purposes. We emphasize the idea of keeping an open mind and not construing the products, services, or data as factual.